Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. My name is Sean Coleman. Hope wherever you are and wherever you are listening, you are having a great start to your day. This is our second podcast of the day, but the reason why we wanted to make it a special occurrence is because I have with me one of the best draft minds we have talked to leading up to the 2021 draft. He's been kind enough to join us again, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, Richard Stamen, a.k.a. Mavs Draft. Richard, how does it feel now to be past the draft? Have you been able to sleep?
Kind of. The Mavs did me no favors. They kept me up late last night, signing guys till 2 a.m. So that didn't really help me.
Well, let me ask this another way. Could you, as much detail as you want to give, what has your week been like? For listeners, myself, you know, we cover a specific team, but for you, obviously major networks have their draft coverage guys. You do such fine work through your own efforts and things such as that. What has your week been like when it comes to coverage? Is it a bunch of podcasts? Is it updating things on a consistent basis based off moves? Is it all this stuff? Just how busy of a week has it been for you, and for what reasons has it been that busy?
Yeah, I mean, it's a busy week. Honestly, the whole month, it's every week, like from the combine, I think was 1 month ago to now. It's just like every day is pretty busy now. It's a lot of updating big boards, making sure, just kind of micromanaging it almost. But the worst part was honestly building out mocks was the hardest thing, especially with all the moves and all that coming out. But a lot of podcasts definitely took up a lot of time. But, you know, just managing, making sure everything was pristine and I don't, you know, slip. Like in 2018, I kind of rushed it and I forgot to put Kevin Huerter on my board and I realized it mid-draft and I was like, oh, crap. Even though I had actually like in my head ranked him, I just never wrote it down for whatever reason. So like going throughout every single day, making sure I'm not missing something, pretty much going through just finalizing all of the process, I think was what the last week has looked like on top of podcasts.
And without a doubt, your effort is phenomenal and your quality is even more phenomenal. And then the thing about it is you come to the actual show and you have Josh Giddey going to Oklahoma City, the Grizzlies taking Zaire Williams, and Josh Primo going to the Spurs, and boom, there goes the mock draft. So as much as we say mock drafts just absolutely exploded, from someone who does this on a consistent basis at a high level, did this go off track as much as you thought it would?
Yes, but no. I only got 4 picks right in my mock draft. So that like kind of shows how off it was. But also, at the same time, I don't know. I think there were some things where it's like the ranges were so predictable that it actually made everything unpredictable, where you had 12 guys who could have gone top 10. And then there's always a wild card. There's always a wild card in the lottery, really. And once those dominoes start falling, you know, we've seen it in the NFL draft kind of doing a cross sports thing, but like when a quarterback goes and like they say it's a 3 quarterback class and then there's a 4th who could be that the 4th guy and then he goes and then there's maybe a 5th fringe guy. It's just like it changes everything depending on the dynamic of the night. The ranges, I don't think there was really anything surprising until really the final pick of the first round. That was the only thing that really threw me as a curveball.
That sounds like you're thinking that we're going to segue into something, which we are, and that's the Memphis Grizzlies draft from last night. Now, obviously, me and Rich had talked multiple times about ideal folks that were there for the Grizzlies. One person that Rich has in particular been high on himself is James Bouknight. Someone that I had the top of my board, as well as many folks who cover the Grizzlies had at the top of their board, was Moses Moody. And the draft board could not have fallen more perfectly for the Grizzlies. Moody and Bouknight, both there at 10, and the Grizzlies went with Zaire Williams. Your reaction to that when you saw it happen?
Yeah, I mean, to be quite blunt, I really hated the pick at the time. I'm not too high on Zaire because and actually, let me back up on that. I'm really low on his floor because there's a chance that this dude is Mario Hezonja in a lot of ways. Where his tools and everything, it looks nice, but you dive in and you're like, wow, like this guy just really needs to learn how to play basketball and needs to do it quick. So there's a lot of flags there on that front. Not saying he necessarily will be Mario, but there's a lot of similarities in how low his ceiling is. Obviously, if the shot comes along, that his ceiling is probably going to be pretty high. You know, he's a 6'10 shot creator. But I feel like when you moved up to take, you know, to number 10, but you also took on two pretty universally bad contracts. Say what you want about Bledsoe, because I think, you know, one, he was dealt a bad hand in New Orleans, and also his contract is kind of favorable going forward at this point. But the Steven Adams one really hurt to take on, and you did that just to reach for a guy you could have gotten at 17. So I didn't like the approach more than I didn't like the pick.
And that's what I had said earlier today in when I had done the draft analysis, Locked On Grizzlies podcast to begin. I feel it's more situation than it is the selection in terms of Zaire Williams himself. Like, Zaire Williams himself, I feel, makes sense for the Grizzlies. And if they would have got him at 17, it probably would have been, everybody would have probably been a lot more understanding of it. You get the feeling that he may not have been there at 17. That's what the Grizzlies are saying. And, you know, you see players like Josh Primo and others who were taken when they were taken. It kind of lends credibility to that, but that's something we'll likely never know. But for whatever reason, I can certainly see what you're saying. But the way that I'll kind of spin it, I guess, is this, is that obviously the Grizzlies have had two very successful drafts over the past few years. But those were successful because besides Ja Morant, they were taking supporting cast members. They were to the point, I feel, to where they needed to take a gamble. They really needed to try to go for a higher upside guy who has the ceiling of being maybe that third or fourth piece of a championship contender. And Williams seems to be, his ceiling seems to have a higher chance of doing that than maybe a Moody or a Bouknight. The downside of it is, like you said, is his chances of actually getting there are probably significantly lower than Moody or Bouknight becoming relative rotation pieces themselves.
Yeah, and we talked about it a few weeks ago, whenever it was that I was on here last. We talked about it, how Memphis needed the swing for the fences. When they were still at 17, that's why I thought they would go Josh Christopher, who I think if they were there and Zaire was gone, I actually still do think that would have been the pick, seeing as he only went a few picks later. I think they needed to do this. They needed to swing for that star because that's what gets you over the hump from being a play-in team / low-end playoff team to being that top four seed. You need multiple stars on the offensive end. And this is the move to do it. It's just, again, like, I have Bouknight at my number as my number five prospect in the class. Like, he was there. He was going to be that guy who I think he scores 20 points a game very easily. We see Colin Sexton doing it. There's no reason James Bouknight cannot do that. So I had him as a very safe pick that had a high ceiling. And I thought that kind of fit next to Ja. I get it. 6'10 shot creator is harder to turn down. And maybe, you know, he got help and he got dealt a pretty rough hand as freshman year at Stanford. So maybe they gave him the benefit of the doubt, but I mean, I was very scared Orlando was going to do it at 8 and take him. So that's why I'm not too surprised with this pick, but again, risky move they had to take, but also didn't have to take there.
I think that's fair. And, you know, and not trying to, you know, stick too much to the phrase the situation over the selection, but, you know, talking about situation, obviously the thing that's not helping out the Zaire Williams situation is his college season. Dealt with a lot, probably more than even some others did dealing with COVID. But regardless of all that, obviously that had an impact. Richard, we know that his college tape does not support this pick. Just, you know, that's a big reason why it's viewed as such a risky pick. But from his high school tape, what is so intriguing about him? Like, I know it's shot creation. I know it's, you know, possible ball handling, you know, as well as potentially two-way value. But what really sticks out about it? And in terms of the person that Zaire is himself, do you feel the connection with what he is as a person with how good developing talent Memphis is? I do at least think this is one of the places that could give him the best chance in the NBA to reach his ceiling. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think Memphis was one of his ideal landing spots. It was like them, somehow Toronto moved down, and Oklahoma City, because those are like three of the best player development programs in the NBA. So he needed that. To answer the question about high school, I've only seen a little bit. I actually just don't think high school tape, it matters that much when guys go to college. I think it's like you see BJ Boston. I don't know. His high school tape was really good, but he busted in college. And I think college matters 20 times more than high school on that. Like, sure, give some context. It is important in that front. But with Zaire, you know, he was very athletic, and I think he was able to use his athleticism a little bit more in the half court in high school. And I think that was pretty much the biggest difference maker. He was a little bit shyer in at Stanford in the Pac-12 in using his body. He was really skinny. And, you know, in the Pac-12, there are some guys, there are some pretty good defenders in that conference. I mean, you have Evan Mobley, you have Isaiah Mobley, who's a good defender. There's the kid from Oregon State, who is one of the better defenders in the country, Worth Awatishe, who guarded him. Like, there's a lot of guys, and it's hard, and he played against a ton of zone defenses. So I think that's really it. I think he couldn't get to the rim as easily, and it really just took a lot away from his game.
And with that being said, the one other thing that we'll hit on when it comes to Zaire Williams is, I think, again, something that plays into a bit of maybe the letdown or disappointment Grizzlies fans had when the selection was made. And Zach Kleiman backed it up last night. Zach Kleiman said the words, "This is a multi-year process with Zaire Williams." Zaire Williams is not your typical lottery pick, I think, in that with as deep as this Grizzlies roster is, we're not looking for an immediate impact type guy. This, he may legitimately be someone that kind of has a redshirt year, plays a lot for the hustle, develops his game. But if you're looking for immediate impact like we've seen from many Grizzlies rookies over the past 2 years, that's probably not going to be the case in Zaire's situation. Do you feel that is a good thing, or do you feel it may not necessarily be that good of a thing, that he's probably going to be more of a redshirt type season this year and getting a lot of minutes?
I think it's pretty good for everybody involved. Rookies generally aren't positive players, especially very raw rookies. It's pretty rare. I mean, you see what Poku did in Oklahoma City. He was the worst player in the league. And before he went to the bubble. So having expectations for rookies to be like rotation players is honestly pretty risky. So redshirting him and just not even letting him really do anything outside of maybe garbage time seems like a good idea to me. I think it's beneficial for both sides. This is a very good team to have him develop in and learn from in practice. You know, you look at who is around him, right? Eric Bledsoe and John Moran. And again, say what you want about Eric Bledsoe, I think he's going to thrive. Completely side note, but I think those guys are going to be good for him in practice. They'll teach him a lot. Having the floor generals and defensive guys will help him a lot. And I think also having someone who has supreme confidence in his own game next to him, assuming he stays on the roster, Dylan Brooks, is massive for Zaire Williams. There is probably, I just feel like his confidence is contagious, and that'll really help Zaire.
One thing that certainly was encouraging, you know, you had mentioned last night, just our interactions, you know, there certainly was, you know, a bit of a more positive tone when we started talking this morning. And I can certainly say the same on my end. You start to make sense of it, you know, not out of, you know, hey, this is just what we have to live with, but you really start to see that in terms of the player and the skill set, meeting the needs of an organization that loves to take care of its players and develop its players, this is a really good opportunity for both Williams and the Grizzlies that could pay off huge down the road. But obviously, Zaire Williams was just the beginning of the night. The rest of the night may have been a bigger disappointment, as I talked about earlier in the draft analysis. Coming up, going to talk about Aldama pick, the Santi Aldama pick, and also missed opportunities that may have happened for the Grizzlies. So, Rich, something that me and you had talked about the last time we spoke was that the Grizzlies at 17 had really been focused on talents that likely were going to fall after 17. Now, Trey Murphy actually was a big one that was connected to the Grizzlies. He went at 17, but my point was so much value was there on this board at pick from 20 on, after 20. And so many teams were making moves to get up at cheap prices to get players that they wanted. Was it surprising to you that the Grizzlies were not one of those teams with how much they had been connected with talents that were in that range?
Yeah, I mean, the interchangeable nature of this draft, kind of like I said with my mock draft being so wrong earlier, the draft was pretty interchangeable. And there were a lot of guys, I think, if you had five teams that 17, I don't think a single one of them would have had the exact same best player available. Like the range for so many guys in this draft, I think that having 17 could have been, I mean, not to put my opinions on this, but like 17 could have been a much more valuable pick in so many different ways, even if you still took Zaire. Like, think about the money difference. There's just so many different things that, again, could have taken someone else that maybe had a better chance of reaching the upside. There's a lot there.
And also, you know, you're looking at the fact that some of the most valuable, some of the teams that instantly won the draft were because of picks that they made in the 20s. You know, you look at the Clippers, you know, and getting Keon Johnson, and I think winding up with Jason Preston. You look at the 76ers having Jaden Springer fall to them. You look at the Nets, who got the players that they did on cheap contracts like Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharpe. It seems like that there was plenty of value that was there. But the other thing that really stands out to me is when you look at this Grizzlies team, Richard, I think that the Grizzlies, they really needed to try to take a swing. You took your wing upside. You took your upside swing in a wing. Why not take it on the perimeter where you've got a bunch of quantity, but you really don't have that guy that stands out as a compliment to Ja Morant? It feels like the Grizzlies really missed out on an opportunity to find a compliment to Ja Morant long-term with Christopher, Springer, and others being on the board in the 20s.
Yeah, and I know you really hurt not having Jaden Springer there, but I mean, Trey Mann was available at 10. Like, I have him, I had him as my 11th ranked player. So, you know, there was a lot of value, like you said, that could have complemented Ja directly. I just have some questions, I guess, about what Memphis's approach again was in this pick, like, because it seemed they were moving up for Giddey. That's what Woj had said. And then all of a sudden they went Zaire Williams. It was like, okay, so are you just going for talent, which, like, fine, totally okay. But, like, it just seemed very unclear what their direction was with that. Because, like you said, you could have addressed the needs that you tried addressing with Josh Giddey in some form or fashion, but then you just went totally, you just went from first base to third base without touching second base. It makes no sense to me.
And then the other thing is so getting to the Santi Aldama, and I apologize, I mentioned his name incorrectly in the previous podcast, and it's Santi Aldama. With the Santi Aldama pick, you know, obviously I talked about all the different, you know, the unique situation that's there as far as the conflicting information about does he want to play now, when will he play, who made him a promise. Despite all that stuff, the other thing that sticks out to me is that the Grizzlies have more certainty in their front court, I think, in terms of post players, than they do even in the backcourt. But yet the Grizzlies went after another highly, you know, intriguing skill size combination in Santi Aldama. Do you really think that they needed that, Rich? I mean, I know that you really, at that point in time, you don't really care about roster fit when you get into the late first, early second round. But again, it just seems like that with already having taken a clear project in Zaire Williams, you would have at least wanted to find a prospect that you were more certain had at least an above average or multiple above average skills that could have contributed right away in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not holding anything back on this. This was a terrible pick. He was my 90th ranked player. I looked into him a little bit, didn't really take much of what he did that seriously, because the first game I ever watched of him, he was airballing jumpers with guys in his face. The jump shot, you know, is nice when it's open, but I just don't know if he can translate it. He has a lot of tools. It didn't even seem like Hollinger talked about it. He didn't even seem like he wanted to be in the NBA this year. And then all of a sudden, he told teams, don't draft me. And then Memphis is like, you know what? First round. And it's like, really? Like, there are so many guys that were on the board at this point that I don't understand. And if you wanted to reach, there were other guys to reach for. Why not Isaiah Todd, who I think might have been the very next pick even? Like, if you were going for the upside power forward, why not Isaiah Todd? What was the difference between him? There, you could say that exact thing for quite literally on my board, like 50 players.
Well, and you look at it, you know, he certainly met the analytics part of things that the Grizzlies seem to put preference on, that across the board added value type impact. Obviously, the fact that he was asked to be a playmaker at Loyola Maryland in the highlights show he legitimately was the playmaker. But the thing that stands out to me is that, yes, he produced against that level of talent, but basically he could because of the level of talent he was playing against. There's not the same type of fluidity when it comes to athleticism and things like that. You basically have it's great that he could do these skills, but he's doing it at a pace you would expect a big man to do instead of someone who has the rare agility of a Jaren Jackson Jr. And that really stood out to me. It's great that he has all these tools, but the athleticism that you need to pull it off at the next level really seems to be a question. Kind of like you had mentioned to me before the show, him scaling up to the NBA really seems to be a question.
Yeah, I just, don't get me wrong. I don't like the argument of when people say like, oh, but he played this weak competition, because CJ McCollum played weak competition. Ja Morant played weak competition. It doesn't matter. Like, if you're good, you're good. But there were alarming things, like I said, where he couldn't shoot over some guys in the Patriot League. That's a flag. Like, it wasn't necessarily, I should say, it wasn't consistent that it didn't happen, but the flashes of it not happening should be held in the same value as we say, like, hey, this did happen. So I don't know if his game scales up from the Patriot League, and maybe I'm wrong. I've seen guys do, you know, some 180s in terms of scaling up. We saw Filip Petrušev turn it up a notch even more after winning West Coast Conference Player of the Year and then going to Serbia to play pro. He was outstanding. And then we've also seen this year another draft and play guy was Oscar Da Silva from Stanford. He went over to Germany and really just couldn't handle it. And my worry is like, he had a good skill set, crazy good basketball IQ. I thought his game is actually tailor-made for Europe as a power forward, and he struggled. So who knows what Santi will do. I think this might go down as one of the very riskiest draft and stashes I've ever seen in my life.
And that's why I wanted to bring you on here, was the complete honesty. So obviously when it comes to the Grizzlies and their picks, you know, you can make sense of it. You can make sense of wanting to go with size and skill. The thing that I'll ask, and just hitting on the Grizzlies picks, is that when coming into this draft, Rich, and you were looking at what the Grizzlies needed, you had put out your big board about what you were looking at them to do at 10 and 40. But at the end of the day, the Grizzlies did need size and skill. I feel that they went that direction with these picks. But just at the end of the day, the best way to sum it up is they probably didn't go the best routes. They probably didn't go the most convincing or confidence-inducing routes to get that done.
Yeah, I mean, his size, both guys' size, I mean, they didn't draft anybody that was six single digits as the second number. So they went for oversized skill players. And I guess it's not too terribly surprising. I mean, they love Jaren Jackson Jr., which obviously, like, who doesn't? But I do think think that's probably the area. Maybe they're trying to hit an untapped market where they say, hey, this is like the next wave, which it kind of already has been. I guess it's not too untapped, but by really swinging, there's really no 6'10 shot creators in outside of one Kevin Durant, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. And not to say that as a comparison, obviously, but I think they really think that that's probably the next star mold to put next to Ja Morant. And that was probably the approach they took.
And it makes perfect sense. You know, I've seen maybe at his peak a Brandon Ingram, some version of Rashawn. Rashawn Lewis. I couldn't think of the guy off the top of my head. Some version of that at his peak, but also just as much of a chance that he could be a poor man's Cam Reddish if he doesn't hit. So certainly it's going to be interesting to see. But I agree with you. At the end of the day, they went for the difference-making type that you need in the NBA, and they have to have confidence they'll work it out, even though these picks certainly maybe leave more questions than answers. But so much was going on in the draft. Coming up, I'm going to talk with Richard a bit more about the other teams in the Southwest Division, especially the Houston Rockets. How did they do on draft night, and get his overall thoughts on this draft in general?
The NBA draft now may be in our rearview mirror, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be faced with choices that are going to require you to choose from many options. Well, the best way to make the best choice is to have a choice that has options that you can choose from, that no matter which one you choose, it's going to benefit you. That's Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, the snack to add to your day that not only tastes great, but adds health benefits as well. Have it in the morning for a snack, or in the morning for breakfast, have it in the afternoon as a snack. Whenever you choose to enjoy it, Built Bar is going to make your day better. And if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you're going to make your day even better when you realize there's over 18 different flavors to choose from. And again, none of the choices are bad. Also, if you go to BuiltBar.com and you put in the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your next order from Built Bar. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order from Built Bar.
So, Rich, one thing that stood out to me looking at this draft is that you saw the mock drafts will go out 6 weeks or further, you know, you go about 2-3 months. You get an idea of basically where guys are. But then in the last month, as combines happen and things like that, we start to see guys like Cam Thomas and Jaden Springer and other talents start to go up these draft boards. But then when the draft actually happens, a lot of these guys wind up falling where they originally were. Were you surprised at how much value fell in this draft? And it also surprised a few of the names that certainly went earlier than most expected.
Yeah, I mean, kind of like I said earlier, the interchangeable nature of this draft really impacted a lot. And I think that, you know, Davion Mitchell, for example, we didn't know where he would go. We thought maybe he would go as high as Golden State. We thought maybe he would slip to Golden State again. It's 14. And there were so many guys where it was their range was probably 7-plus picks that it changes a lot. And there's makes a lot of value available for other teams. And there was I can't remember who the pick was. But there was a pick where I tweeted, I was like, hey, this opened up a lot of value for another team early on. And I'm trying to find it now that I am just honestly blanking at who it was, but I think actually, you know what? I'm sorry. It was Zaire. It opened up like book 9 at 11. I think anything beyond 8 for him was a steal. And then you go down further the board, your guy Keon at 21 was a really good value. Jalen Johnson at 20. All these teams not having a consistent big board just created a lot of objective value, I think, from the draft, like analyst perspective.
Obviously, one of the teams that really stood out is a fellow Southwest Division member, and that is the Houston Rockets. Their haul for the night, Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, Usman Garuba, and Josh Christopher. That, when it comes to the draft community, I've seen some positive opinions, but I've also seen a few surprising negative opinions. You know, I would consider that to be a haul, but your thoughts, Rich, you know, you certainly saw Houston move around the draft board in a deep draft. I would think that the kind of the overwhelming majority of people would think they want this draft. If you think that, you know, are you that high on it? But can you see why someone may not necessarily be that high on this haul that they got?
So there's two angles to look at it. I think when you are the freshest team entering a rebuild, because it's them and Orlando are probably the two teams that are newest to a full-on bottom-out rebuild because they dumped their roster or their star players this year. So when you're in that position, they did get Kevin Porter Jr. They do have an advantage in that. They already have one likely cornerstone. But I think something that gets lost on what the draft is and what NBA, like just scouting is that you're also evaluating talent. Like it's very easy to get lost in, hey, this guy is good at this skill, bad at this skill. And then you kind of just forget about what they do as a talent, basketball, IQ, things like that. Things like that can just get very lost. And I think the draft is still, you're drafting talent more than when you're in a rebuild. I think you go with talent first, team building second, because they failed the team building approach. Because I don't understand if you looked at it as if they were, I don't know, Memphis a year ago, say they, or 2 years ago even, say Memphis in 2019 did a similar thing. They added a pick or something in this compared to what they did in 2019. But say they did this, yeah, you might have a case. It would be a bad draft because, you know, you're not surrounding your core well. But there is really no core. At this point, you're trying to just find what could be a core. And that's why I like it. I think they took every single pick was a swing for the fence. I love Garuba. I have him at 9, best defender in the class. He's killing it in the Olympics. Please watch Spain if you can, by the way. Absolutely incredible to watch. He shut down Rui Hachimura the other night. He can guard anybody. But Josh Christopher, big swing for the fences. Doesn't really fit with the fact that you already have Jalen Green now. And then, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. doesn't really play point guard. He's a shooting guard more than a point guard, I think. But their draft isn't, you know, it wasn't exactly fluid, but they also took talent. And when you're bottoming out, don't you just want to find talent? Like that's what Philadelphia did in, sure, Jahlil Okafor was a terrible pick, but that was excessive, and also it still worked out.
And that's the thing about it. It certainly seems like there were plenty of opportunities for it to work out. And that was the other general thing about this draft, Rich, is that, you know, even though, you know, the Grizzlies did not do it like I'd hoped they would, a lot of teams really shine moving around in the second round. One or two picks in the second round that you feel really stand out as being like, okay, this is either a guy who instantly could become a rotation piece, maybe like Jared Butler in Utah, or you really like this high upside swing in the second round that could easily develop quicker than some expected due to his landing spot.
Yeah, so I'll do two that I think were good. I'll do it kind of high, low, and medium. So the high-end one I loved. I hated everything else about this draft that they had for the most part. But the Knicks taking – or no, nope. Nope, sorry, the Thunder. I forgot that that was traded. This is confusing me. So Jeremiah Robinson Earl at 32 to the Thunder. You know, I'm his biggest fan. I have him at 13 on my board. He is the most mistake-free player in the draft. That guy sticks. I love how he is going to help Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's going to help Josh Giddey. He's going to make every single player around him better. Getting that at 32 was a steal. Another guy I liked, kind of just a median outcome where, yeah, he's a starter, but could be some risk because of health, actually, is Isaiah Livers. Stayed in state at Michigan. Didn't have to travel far, but really good shooter. Helps with Sadiq Bey when he comes off the bench and just helps have another shooting option next to Cade and Killian. And then, I mean, obviously Sharif Cooper was there, but I feel like that's too obvious. The one that I didn't like, I'm going to be honest, most people actually really liked this pick. I just don't see it with him translating. Marcus Zagorowski at 49, I thought the Nets could have done better. I'm nitpicking because they did have a very good draft. Zagorowski, I don't see it. I had him, I think, in the 80s or 90s. Quick first step, super quick first step, actually. But his pull-up jump shot and overall shooting are big question marks. Really short frame. He's a shooting guard in a point guard's body. That was my one gripe in the second round.
So if I'm correct, he was taken at 49, but right before him was possibly the biggest surprise of the night, Sharif Cooper falling to Atlanta. Like, obviously, it seems like he landed in a good spot, but even if he didn't go to Atlanta, he would have gone to the Nets. I think that that has to be, what's your biggest steal of the draft? Maybe one or two biggest steals that you could think of, your biggest steal in the 20s and then your biggest steal in the second round. Is Sharif Cooper on that level?
Yeah, I mean, so let's go in reverse order. The biggest steal of the second round is far and away Sharif Cooper. Like, no matter what you think of him, I'm very skeptical, but I still had him in the 20s. Or actually, I think I had him at 20. Like, he's a guy who his on-ball skill is just ridiculous, but he literally just cannot play off ball. And that's, I think, why he fell. He also won't be a good defender in the NBA. So I think that's why he fell. The other steal of the second round, I mean, JT Thor, I thought he would go first round, or Miles McBride. Those two really just high up. Well, Thor is high upside. Miles McBride is going to help the Knicks day one as a backup point guard. But, and those two were back-to-back picks, 36, 37. But the steal of the 20s for me, I mean, I touched on it earlier. Usman Garuba, my ninth-ranked player going 23, was incredible value.
And the last question that we'll ask, and there's only one correct answer to this. Hey, Richard, what was the biggest steal in undrafted free agency?
And there's only one correct answer. I mean, Aaron, or I think that, I can't remember where Aaron Henry ended up, but him. I know you want me to say, I forget who Memphis got, and he ended up with Philly, but him. Who was I supposed to say?
How dare you?
Honestly, dude, keeping up with undrafted free agency has killed me. Was it Keaton Wallace? Because I like him, and he signed with Memphis.
No, it was okay. So now that is what I will ask. That was going to be my next question. So Yves Pons actually signed a contract with Memphis. Right.
Oh, Sean, and, I'm so sorry.
I'm just kidding with you. But I will ask this question in terms of what you see, and someone who probably has a bit more knowledge than a lot of us do. So I know that we got Romeo Weems from, I believe, DePaul on an Exhibit 10 contract. Yves Pons was reported to have signed a contract with Memphis, but did you say there was another player that Memphis got as well?
Yeah, Keaton Wallace. This one actually broke right before we started recording. So he is someone I followed closely now for 3 years at UTSA because, funny enough, or actually, yeah, three or four. I can't even remember. I've lost track of time because the pandemic threw me off. But so I go to the Conference USA tournament every year that it's in Dallas. I've gotten a chance to see a lot of guys I never thought I'd ever learn anything about. Keaton Wallace is one of them. He is a 3-and-D wing, kind of undersized at 6'5", 6'4". Probably 6'4.5", whatever, but doesn't really matter. He is a really good shooter, incredible motor, can block some shots, has no fear of anybody. And if you want a little pipeline generation here, his brother is Kaysen Wallace, one of the top high school prospects, I think, for 2022.
And then the other thing that I'll say is this, is that so he's going to the summer league team. And also we've got obviously Weems going to Exhibit 10, which typically is a hustle contract. But the thing that it said is that Woj came out and said that Pons signed a contract. He's expected to sign. Would we anticipate that would be a two-way contract, or are we thinking that could be Exhibit 10?
I'd be shocked if it's as low as Exhibit 10. I think it's a two-way.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. So, but overall, so your assessment of the Memphis Grizzlies draft is a lot of questions, but wait and see and hope for the best. Definitely not the anywhere near the same confidence in their past two drafts as you'd hope that many of us would have seen, right?
Right, and I'm just going to say it. I don't believe in draft day grades. I think that is just the easiest way to end up on Old Takes Exposed. The draft isn't won on draft night. Like, that is the biggest misconception. If it was, like, so many teams would have lost in 2016 for missing out on, like, Dorian Finney-Smith. Or, you know, there were guys who were seen as value in some places, and then they just kind of tank. Like, I don't know. You can't judge off what happens based on your pre-draft analysis when, first of all, your pre-draft analysis is probably based on a vacuum and not, you know, team where they get drafted changes it. So I'm holding any reservations. I have criticisms, but I don't think it's fair to say, oh, they lost the draft or anything like that.
That's a very fair way of taking it. Rich, it has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I know that it's kind of like an accountant during tax season. April 15th has arrived. You can finally rest, but all your work has been highly appreciated. And where can people find your work? Obviously, we will stay in touch as we continue to go on towards the regular season. But what plans do you have? Any 2022 early looks or anything like that going on your end?
Yeah, so Locked On NBA Draft, I still do every Tuesday. I'm probably going to just go over the draft, but I've already started looking again into 2022. The returners are real nice. I don't know what Memphis's pick situation is, but there's a lot of chance for some upperclassmen and even sophomores in next year's class.
Three first-round picks in 2022. Let me ask you this question. So we're probably talking about, I would say, to be fair, late lottery or a pick around where they had it this year. But then the Lakers 2022 pick, as well as the Utah Jazz 2022 pick, so probably two picks in the 20s. But say the Grizzlies wanted to move up to like that 8 to 12 range next year. A name or two that you could give Grizzlies fans to watch for the 2022 draft that really could be something to go after. Maybe not obviously the first or second pick, but a later top 10 guy projected that they could look forward to watch over this next year who could be a draft target for them next year.
Yeah, honestly, you know who I'm going to go with? Someone who's not a high schooler. I'm actually going to say it's the best returning player. I'm going to go with Jaden Ivey. He made a name for himself at the FIBA U19s. He is the son of former NBA player Royal Ivey. Really just a modern shooting guard, combo guard. Like, I think he's the guy to look for early on.
Got it. Yeah, that's a name that I've, you know, in some of our group chats I've started to see. But that is a weird way to say Kennedy Chandler, Rich. I don't get it. It's a really weird way to say Kennedy Chandler. UT Vol Kennedy Chandler, by the way. Projected number one pick, right?
You know what? I should have just gone with only Tennessee guys. What about Brandon Huntley Hatfield? He could be number one. Am I doing this right?
Number one in my heart. I'm kidding. His name is Richard Stamen. Thank you so much, Rich. And if you'll stick with us for just a second, but thank you very much for joining the show today. His name's Richard Stamen. My name's Sean Coleman. We'll talk to you again soon here on the Locked On Grizzlies podcast next week, all dedicated to the picks, some selections, some special guests who will be with us talking more about the Grizzlies picks and obviously looking forward to free agency. Have a great weekend.
The NBA draft now may be in our rearview mirror, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be faced with choices that are going to require you to choose from many options. Well, the best way to make the best choice is to have a choice that has options that you can choose from that no matter which one you choose, it's going to benefit you. That's Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, the snack to add to your day that not only tastes great, but adds health benefits as well. Have it in the morning for a snack, or in the morning for breakfast, have it in the afternoon as a snack. Whenever you choose to enjoy it, Built Bar is going to make your day better. And if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, you're going to make your day even better when you realize there's over 18 different flavors to choose from. And again, none of the choices are bad. Also, if you go to BuiltBar.com and you put in the promo code LOCKED15, that's LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your next order from Built Bar. Again, go to BuiltBar.com, put in the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order from Built Bar.